Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Of course, we're in the holiday season now, and so from time to time, I want to have sort of holiday ideas going on, but not holiday in terms of buying gifts, at least not for yourself. Really, when you live in my world of the politics and thinking about what government does, it's really about helping others and giving back when you're able to do it. Perhaps some of the people listening to us are folks who are in need. And so now that we've got that holiday chill in the air and holidays where we all stuff ourselves with all sorts of food, and let's remember that there are a lot of people who don't have what many of us are blessed to have, and I want to talk about what we can do to help them. Joining me is Lisa Dietlin. She's a philanthropic advisor. This is what she does for a living, advice for people in this area. You've seen her very often on WGN News and also on my Politics Tonight show, and now we get her on the podcast. Lisa, thanks for joining me.
Hey, happy to be here, Paul, and happy holiday season.
Well, absolutely, for all of us. And so, you know, let's set the tone here a little bit. When people think about people in need, we always think it's somebody over there. It's not me. It's not my family. Maybe it's even nobody that I know. But the truth is, and I know your philosophy is, hunger may be closer than you think.
It absolutely is. Hunger is a 365-day-a-year problem for more than 45 million Americans. And what that means, it's the mom or the dad that's working two jobs to put food on the table, the mom that might water down the milk to make it go further. It might mean that kids never experience a second helping of food at the table. You know, hunger is hidden in so many ways in our community. You know, they say one out of every six Chicagoans, and that translates pretty universally across the nation, are food insecure, meaning they don't know where their next meal is going to come from.
So if we want to help out, I mean, probably the, I shouldn't say the easiest thing to do, because it's not that it's easy, but one of the most convenient things to do if you want to help others in need is, for one, make a donation. Give some money to organizations and entities that do help other people, right? That's one way to help.
Absolutely. You know, that old saying, cash is king, is really true in the food business especially. You know, many of us at this time of year think, you know, oh, I want to put a food basket together, or, oh, you know, I want to go to the grocery store and I'll buy a meal. But what folks don't often understand, what your listeners might not understand, is that food banks and food pantries and agencies and soup kitchens oftentimes have 4 to 6 times the buying power with those financial resources we provide than we do. And what that means is, you went to the grocery store, Paul, and you bought $10 worth of groceries. If you gave that $10 to a food bank, a soup kitchen, a food agency, they might be able to buy $40 to $60 worth of food because of their relationships with vendors and food producers.
So really what you're saying is that while some people want to donate, you know, we at WGN, we just had a can drive. People brought brought cans of food, that kind of thing, which is wonderful. But it sounds like when you make a donation to entities that have buying power, your dollar can go further in terms of what it's actually buying.
It absolutely can. And while canned goods, great, and I saw that online where WGN was doing the can drive, and applaud them and all the employees, what I fear is that people clean out their pantry. And what I often say to folks when they tell me, oh, you know, I'm cleaning out my pantry and donating the food, you know, to a homeless shelter or whatever.
Yeah, I don't want it. I'll give it to somebody else.
Right? If you don't want it, the person who's receiving it might not know what to do with those smoked oysters or those, you know, I don't know, some of those little spices that we get, capers. I guess that's my least favorite.
Yeah.
You know, and an ingredient. But I said, you know, if you don't know what to do with them, my guess is the person who's receiving them might not know what to do with them or might not care for the taste of them. And so, you know, giving dollars actually allows food banks, soup kitchens, and pantries to buy food that's indigenous to people that they're used to. You know, there's these group of Marshallians from the Marshall Islands that settled in Arkansas. And, you know, the food bank there started distributing food, and And they weren't eating it. They weren't taking it. And they realized that, you know, the food that Marshallians, which I learned is their name, Marshall Island folks, ate was different than what Arkansas plate. And so they actually were able to buy the food that was more native to their palate than what was perhaps being distributed by the food bank for those who had grown up in Arkansas their whole life.
Now, for those people who say, look, I'm not really, you know, flush with cash right now, or it's a difficult thing with, of course, anything, you give $10, anything can help.
Yeah.
But what are some of the other ways that people can, and I mean, one of the ways, for example, is go to a food kitchen, volunteer your time. What are the things people can do aside from give money to help during this time of holiday giving?
They absolutely can volunteer. You know, that's the number one thing I always champion. You know, give your time, take your family. Teach that tradition to your children, to your family members, give back, you know, educate people about the importance of being aware of what's happening in your neighborhood, in your community. Invite somebody over for a meal. Perhaps there is a senior couple living next door to you that their children are grown and gone and living in different parts of the country, and they don't come home every holiday. And again, hunger's 365 days a year. Invite them over for that barbecue. Invite them over for that Sunday dinner. You know, invite them over. Or take them over leftovers. You know, if you're making a pot of chili, if your pot of chili, Paul, gets like mine, it gets the control. And it's like,
well,
oh my
I know
God,
how to cook. I might have a pot of chili.
Where do I take all this chili? You know, actually, you know, take it to your neighbor or into work. You know, a lot of people starting out, you know, in new jobs, you know, you could, you know, take a pot of chili in and you're helping them out with a meal. Hunger doesn't look like what we think it looks like of the bloated belly in the third world and developing countries. So there's a way that you can help feed. You know, I also think in this time of busyness of the holidays that are coming upon us, and even throughout the year, I would say this, you know, give your neighbors and your friends a break. If they have small children, you know, offer to babysit for them. If they're an elderly couple that might be trying to stretch their budget, maybe you shovel their sidewalk for them so that they don't have to pay somebody to come and shovel it for them. There's lots of small ways that we can all help each other during the holiday season. And some of it's giving our time, some of it's doing service for others, and some of it's providing a financial resource.
I think one of the things you're reminding me of, Lisa, is that, and I know you, one of the statistics you put out there, one out of every six families in Chicago is in need of or experiencing hunger. Do I have that right? Basically one in six?
Correct. You absolutely do have that correct.
So I think one of the things we want to realize is we don't just get hungry on the holidays. We're hungry 365 days a year. So the kinds of things we're suggesting, while they get highlighted at holiday season, the reality of it is people are hungry 365 days a year.
They absolutely are, and this is a startling statistic I learned when I started working with Feeding America, which is the nation's network of food banks, more than 200 food banks that cover every county in this country, this wonderful country. You know, I thought, oh, my gosh, we can't possibly have a hunger problem because what the news focuses on is obesity. You know, everybody has more than enough food. We're obese. You know, we always talked about how overweight this country is. Well, the fact is it's not nutritious food. I mean, that's a part of it. There's also food that people are eating that's not adding to their, you know, dietary nutritional needs. So when you think about hunger in this country, it looks very, very different. And here's the kicker. We can track it often by the number of free and reduced lunches and breakfasts that kids get at school. And think about this, Paul. While we might get excited for holiday breaks, for many kids, when there's a holiday break in their school schedule, they don't have access to food. They don't have access to hot meals, a hot breakfast, and a hot lunch. A lot of kids, their last hot meal is Friday lunch before they get to school Monday morning. That weekend is really tough for them, and there's a lot of backpack programs that schools are instituting and have instituted. Summer is a tremendous time of hunger for many kids that get free and reduced lunches and breakfasts. And I think when I learned that statistic, it took my breath away to think about kids running around and being hungry, you know, playing outside but not knowing if there's going to be a meal inside that has protein, has tuna fish, has, you know, beef, protein, peanut butter, and it has fresh fruits and vegetables. I don't know about you, but when I walk in my neighborhood, I see kids eating things that might have calories but aren't necessarily nutritious and add value to their diet.
Well, exactly. And so this puts a highlight. So really, the message is so broad. It's all year round. It gets highlighted here. But by the way, many people are involved in their churches, their synagogues, places. That's another place where you can give back all year round, but certainly in the holiday times, work with your place of worship to get things in to people who are in need.
Absolutely. And don't forget our military and our veterans. You know, There's a lot of highlighting of the challenges that veterans face and their families face and the military families face. You know, sometimes they often are hungry. I've heard actually food pantries on military bases because the family can't make the dollar stretch. We're expecting these men and women to do amazing work in protecting us, you know, 24/7, 365,
right.
And we can take care of their families. I mean, you think about nursing homes and perhaps hospitals that might have people staying with them long term. Call ahead. I often recommend call ahead. Just don't show up, you know, with 24 dozen cookies or something.
Exactly.
But call ahead and see what's needed. Because, you know, everybody appreciates, you know, good food and quality food, especially during the holidays, but it can be used all year long. I mean, think about if you're in a nursing home or a senior center, and if you and some friends got together and took a barbecue to them in the spring or in the summer. My guess is that people living in senior centers and in nursing homes don't often get barbecue, but they get a whole lot of food during the holidays.
For those of us who, you know, sort of just take for granted the wonderful blessings we have of, oh, I can't eat another bite, I'm so stuffed, more turkey, no, couldn't possibly have any more of that, that there's people for whom that kind of gift would be the blessing of the season. So let's take care of them.
It is. And if you're thinking about a special time of year, one thing I would love your listeners to know is that for food to get into a holiday distribution, it has to be 2 weeks before.
Oh.
Because just like we go grocery shopping the week before a holiday to make sure we have all of our ingredients, food is distributed a week before to those in need so that they can prepare for their holiday meal. So if you were planning on doing something the day before, it probably won't get into that holiday distribution, but it would be used for the next distribution or the next holiday. So
what a great point.
Folks, you know, get a little confused because they get excited like, oh, I'm buying a turkey for Thanksgiving, I'll buy two and don't one. And then they get frustrated because they're told it's not going to be distributed because the distribution happened the week before. Just remember, people who are food insecure and don't have access to food still have the same issues we have. They still got to make menu, they have to plan, they
right.
have to know who's coming, how much food they have. And so food banks and food pantries try to make that a little bit easier by distributing the food a week ahead of time.
Perfect. Lisa, for people who want to check you out, you got a brand new website people should look at, so tell them where to go.
Go to lisadietlin.com, and that's L-I-S-A, D as in David, I-E-T as Tom, L-I-N.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, friend, like, poke, nudge, whatever we do these days.
And you've written books, you've got resources. This isn't just about the conversation we've had. There's so many great pieces of life advice available on your website. I thank you for your time on this topic. And I know there's so many. We have to talk about charitable giving. There's things we got to talk about. We're going to do it on another podcast. I know I'll get you back. I got to do that. And I appreciate your time here on having people to give for the holidays. Give back when you are lucky to have received.
Everybody can make a difference. You just have to take a moment, hit pause in your life, and say, what am I going to do to help someone's life be a little better
exactly.
today?
Exactly. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for joining me. Lisa Dietlin, lisadietlin.com. Thanks a lot.
Wasting away.
I know.
It's nobody's fault.
Well, it's nobody's fault, but when you hear that music, good luck getting it out of your head, and especially getting it out of your head when you enjoy an evening of watching the new, soon-to-go-to-Broadway, we're beating Broadway to this, Escape to Margaritaville. Yeah, that song is in it. It's in it big time, and you are not going to get that, and of course, the rest of Jimmy Buffett's music out of your head when you see the very fun show Escape to Margaritaville. Joining me, it's playing, by the way, I should say, at the Oriental Theater through December 2nd. But joining me now, one of the stars of the show, and I've asked to talk to him specifically because we have a history, and it's Eric Peterson, who plays the role of Brick. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul. Absolutely happy to be here.
And, of course, our history is that you and I were together about how many years ago? Was it 7 years ago?
About 7 years ago, exactly, yeah.
You were at that time the star of the national tour of Shrek the Musical.
That's right. I was here 7 years ago. I'd understudied the role of Shrek on Broadway, but when we did the national tour, I got to play the role and did that for a year. But we opened that entire tour, that year-long tour right here in my hometown of Chicago, which was awesome.
Absolutely, and you and I did a special on that for Comcast, probably still available somewhere people try to get. But you also, by the way, you were on Broadway in School of Rock playing the role of Dewey. I talked to, you know, that cast was just here. And so Rob Coletti was on the podcast just a week or so ago. And, you know, there's kind of a similarity. When you think of people playing that Dewey role, you, Rob, John Belushi, Jack Black, there's kind of a thing to you guys, right?
Absolutely. It's definitely a type. There's a few roles. Another role that I did is the role of Barfay in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
So did Coletti, by the
Josh
way.
Yep, he played that as well. There's also the role of Elder Cunningham, the part that Josh Gad played in Book of Mormon.
That's right.
They're all very similar roles in this sort of like a guy who's maybe a little bit out of shape, a lot of energy, very earnest, and hopefully very lovable to audiences.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. But and people, by the way, they may know you from television. You were in Kirstie, right? You were a regular in that.
Sure, yeah.
Big Bang, Modern Family, and of course, if you're not in Law & Order, you don't belong in New York anyway.
that's right.
So, and by the way, I do want to ask you about this, just because you got an upcoming film, a Coen Brothers film, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, large role in that, or something? What are you going to do in that one?
It's a small role, but it's I'm just in one scene, but it's a really cool project, and it's obviously with the Coen Brothers, which is, you know, the top of the line
in
regards to creative forces. The movie is, I think it's being released on Netflix and then possibly in theaters, but don't quote me on that. I know it's definitely coming out on Netflix. The idea of it is it's six short films put together as one long piece, and they all sort of take place in sort of post-Civil War, the American West, and stories like that. So I have one of the scenes in that project, and just got to shoot that out in Santa Fe a couple months ago, and I'm excited for that to come out.
Which is great. And you, your wife, your two kids, great family, Chicago, a Chicago guy. But let's talk about Escape to Margaritaville, because as it's billed, it's sort of more than a musical. It's a way of life. And listen, if you're a Jimmy Buffett, like I said, I left on opening night with half of Buffett's music in my head. You do this eight times a week. Do you have Buffett playing all the time, or do you sort of like, I got to put on Barbra Streisand? I mean, what's going on?
I myself am a Parrothead, and I've been a Parrothead since I was a kid. My father, my grandparents, and everybody, we grew up on boats here in Chicago and on Lake Michigan, and all we ever listened to was Jimmy Buffett and Bob Marley when we were on the boat. So
I love it.
It was so exciting for me to be a part of this project, and I'm not tired of the music at all, because it feels like home to me. The music, you know. So it is funny though. My daughter, who is 7 years old, we allowed her to come see the show on opening night, and she had not really heard any of this music yet. And just, this last week, she's been singing, Margaritaville on repeat, to the point where we were like, okay, let's teach you a different song, because
I love it.
She's been singing it so many times. So the music is just so infectious and so full of joy and the great kind of easy, relaxing island vibes, and I think it's hard to push it away.
Was your daughter the one kicking my chair? No, I'm kidding. so, by the way, the opening night was special because Jimmy Buffett was there, went up on stage, did some numbers afterwards, and I wish I had also been there a few nights before that, because not only did Jimmy get up there, but Lin-Manuel Miranda was in town, and the two of them performed. And you must – I don't know. In the audience, I'm going, how cool is this? And you're on stage, but it still has to be cool for you to have Buffett up there to sing the night you had Miranda. I mean, is that just incredible stuff?
It is. It really is cool. It doesn't get old. I think that people that are at that level, you know, a lot of times, and most of the time, the reason that they are that level is there is a certain aura, a certain energy around them that just makes you be like, wow, that person is really filling the room with their presence. So anytime Jimmy comes, you feel that. You feel that in the room. And we as actors, even though we've met him, you know, many, many times, especially seeing him in front of a crowd and how the crowd just erupts. And when Lin was there, it was great. I'd met Lin a few times before, but, you know, when he was sort of a surprise guest, you know, the crowd just erupted. So it really, it doesn't get old at all. It's still very, very exciting to
Incredible.
Be with
them. All right, so for folks, this is a vehicle for Buffett music, but there are kind of six main characters, I would say. There's you and Tammy, a woman who's otherwise engaged. But then there's Tully and Rachel, who, you know, kind of take a lead role there. Tully, the sort of Jimmy Buffett character, I suppose, if you were to have one.
Yeah.
And Marley and JD, a little bit older in the crowd. But if somebody were to ask you, I know what I say to them, what is this show about? It revolves around those six in a great ensemble cast. But what would you tell them the show is about?
I always say that basically it's an original love story that's using classic Jimmy Buffett hits. So it's not necessarily the story of Jimmy Buffett in the way that, you know, like Jersey Boys is kind of the story of the Four Seasons. That's not what we're doing. We're doing more an original story, kind of in the vein of Mamma Mia, where it was an original story and then uses the musical hits that people know and love of ABBA. Now we're doing that same kind of thing with Jimmy Buffett. So it's this story of two buddies who, you know, live on an island and work at a bar, and I play a bartender. Paul Alexander Nolan plays Tully, who's a singer songwriter at the bar, and we kind of have a rotating weekly girlfriends as people come to the island for a week of vacation, and then we usually say bye-bye, never to be seen again. And this particular week that the show takes place, both of us kind of meet our match romantically and sort of feel like maybe these two are a little different and maybe we should put a bit more effort into making this more than a 1 week fun vacation romance.
Or one would argue you guys grow up. You grow up a little bit, maybe as that goes on.
Absolutely.
Now, by the way, your girlfriend, so to speak, Tammy, who's played by Lisa Howard, she's otherwise engaged, right? I mean, here's what's different. When you have a Mamma Mia or whatever, you get these love stories, and that's fine. But in this show, I mean, there's almost this level of wait a minute. She's supposed to be married to somebody else. So is there your dynamic? The audience has to, and they do fall in love with you because they have to, because you're kind of breaking up a relationship. Maybe it's one that needs to be broken up.
Yeah, it is interesting because it's not the typical. I would say Rachel and Tully, who are the two main characters, theirs is a bit more conventional
right.
in its story of that, you know, two people who maybe don't hit it off at first, but then find each other. But with me and Tammy, it is true that she comes to the island for her sort of bachelorette weekend, but her fiance at the time is not the best guy and is sort of not treating her very well. And I think she sees somebody who it may start out as just a friendship, but I think my character of Brick really like pumps her up and tells her how amazing she is and she doesn't need to change for this guy. And then throughout the process of the show, I think she sort of comes to that realization that maybe, you know, this high school boyfriend who's now my fiance is not really the direction to head.
And of course, what's fun is you kind of, if you know Buffett's music, you sort of, you know, a lot of the famous songs and you're waiting to figure out, like Mamma Mia was. I'm glad you hear you say Mamma Mia because it is the obvious comparison.
Sure.
That is to say, Margaritaville is to Jimmy Buffett as Mamma Mia is to ABBA. But at the same time, I wasn't sure if that's almost if Buffett himself would say, like, don't say that. I don't want you to make that comparison. But they are. They're both sort of jukebox musicals that are there to have us enjoy the music.
Yeah, and, you know, we try to shy away a little bit from the idea of jukebox musical because I think that sometimes that has, for some people, a slightly negative connotation.
Huh.
But I think what's great is that our writers, Greg Garcia and Mike O'Malley and Jimmy, have done so well is to plant seeds early on in the show, whether it be with lines or other songs, that then they like unfurl in a great sort of beautiful flower later on in the show with song lyrics. And it makes total sense, you know. It's funny that I feel like the music is, we don't put it in the playbill by song, like in the scenes that are coming up. We put the songs that are in the show in alphabetical order.
Right.
And that's on purpose because we kind of don't want you to know what the next song is going to be. We want you to see how the lyrics just naturally unfurl and sort of reveal these classic songs in an interesting way.
And you do have kind of an older couple, the J.D. and Marley character, Don Sparks, Rima Webb, one review of Don's, I loved it, the review of Don's work basically said he doesn't even look like he's acting. He's just living that role.
Yeah, absolutely. He is like that. He's such a good dude. He's this older guy who's really had an amazing career doing both TV and theater, but this is going to be, I could be wrong, but I think it's his first Broadway show, and he's very, very excited to be a part of it.
Well, it's so much fun. As I said, you could see people just literally smiling throughout the whole show. And that's not just me saying that. During the intermission, I was talking to various people, and everybody sort of noticed how do you just look around and see everybody smiling. I know my review comment in the show that's been used in some of the actually, they didn't use the part that I'm going to comment on. But part of my review comment was, you know, we live in such turbulent political times these days that sometimes you just need an escape and be able to sit there and watch that kind of resort beachy scene sort of unfold on the stage above you. It does give you a little break from what's going on in this world today. Maybe that's not the purpose, but it feels nice.
I would agree 1,000,000% with that. And that's something that we've talked about since, you know, we started this process in 2015 was when we did the first reading of it. And so nobody knew where we were going to be going politically. But now the way that it is, we think that the title of the show is so apropos of Escape to Margaritaville. The idea that no matter which side you fall on, everybody is feeling a certain sense of tension in the country. And I think the joy of this show is that it has no political affiliation or drive to it. It's just about people relaxing, connecting with other human beings with great music as the backdrop. And it really is 2.5 hours to not worry at all about what's going on and just kind of enjoy the sun, the beach, the waves, the drinks, and each other's company. And I think that we're really proud that hopefully that's something that people can appreciate in the time that we're doing it.
And I love the fact that we get to see it before New York audiences ever do, which Absolutely. Is just wonderful. And by the way, I'm assuming this happens every night, but I don't mean to ruin anything. What the heck? But beach balls kind of come out when they get flying around the hole. Does that happen every night? Because I stole one, I'll be honest with you.
Yes, it does happen every night. I think the producer said that they have accounted for some lossage, not all, but some lossage of beach balls in the process.
Well, don't tell them I took one, all right?
Okay, I won't.
Actually, I took two. I got two kids. I got to deal with it.
Sure.
Anyway, what a great show. By the way, did you grow up in the city or suburbs? Where'd you grow up here?
I grew up in Carroll Stream, the west suburbs.
Oh, very cool. And are you visiting out there while you're here?
I'm staying downtown. My parents have since moved to Fort Myers, Florida, but all my aunts and uncles are here. The night that Jimmy and Lynn were on stage a few Saturdays ago, I had 45 people from my parents and my wife and kids and aunts and uncles and cousins. We had 45 people there that night. So
you could have made it 46.
I'm very happy to be home.
You could have made it 46 and had me with them. That would have been a great night.
Absolutely.
Eric Peterson, thanks, Chicago's very own, playing just a great role of Brick. I mean, I just, again, it's, you're so wonderfully cast in that role, as everything that you do. I'm so happy for you and proud of you after having worked with you in Shrek so many years ago. Your career is just going great, and I congratulate you. The show is Escape to Margaritaville. It is playing at the Oriental Theater over on Randolph. It's here through December 2nd. And, of course, all you got to do is go to BroadwayInChicago.com to get tickets. Don't miss it. This is, you want to talk about a night of fun, especially during this holiday time prior to December 2nd. Don't miss it. It is going to Broadway. Be sure you see it before it gets there. Eric Peterson, thank you. Break a leg every night, as you already are. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Paul.
And we're going to go out playing a little bit more from Escape to Margaritaville.
Come Monday, it'll be all right. Come Monday, I'll be holding you tight. I spent four lonely days in a brown early haze, and I just want you back by my side.
And while Exit to Margaritaville is Escape to Margaritaville, of course, is great fun. There's another very different, very fun show going on in the city right now as well. Not a musical, though it has some music in it, but it's comedy, it's touching. And when I saw it on opening night, I went, I have got to talk to some of the stars of this show called Significant Other by Joshua Harmon. You may be familiar with him because he wrote a show that did very well called Bad Jews, and also very funny, and In Comes Significant Other, which is over at Theater Wit, and it's playing until December 9th, and if you haven't seen it, it's absolutely fantastic. You'll understand as we talk about it. Joining me are really two of the stars of the show, and great fun that they are, Alex Wiseman. He plays Jordan. He's the main lead. He's been seen, and I should say this is an About Face Theater and Theater Wit production. He's been seen at About Face before, and you've got tons of credits, Alex, but when I saw you at Victory Gardens, Hand of God, you absolutely blew me away, and if memory serves correct, you won the Jeff Award for that, am I right?
I did.
And well, congratulations for that.
Thank you.
And Amanda Drinkall, who plays Laura in this show, she too has been Chicago's Shakespeare and Steppenwolf, and I did see you in Venus and Fur at Goodman. Just such great stuff.
Yeah.
What two great actors you guys are, Alex and Amanda. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
So, absolutely. So, let's talk about the show Significant Other. So, and Alex, I'll come to you because it kind of revolves around you. Tell the audience what this show's about.
Yeah, it's about this guy, Jordan Berman, and he has these three girlfriends who are just his everything, Vanessa and Kiki and Laura. And Laura's really his best friend. And throughout the last years of their 20s, each one of them gets partnered off and married, and he is sort of witness to everything and stops becoming a participant in his own life, it feels like. And each of his friends settles into their new life of partnership, and he questions whether that will ever happen for him.
It's touching. Jordan is a gay man in the show, and so surrounded by women. So in many cases, of course, gay men surrounded by women, it's commonplace, right? I mean, you know, best girlfriends and all that kind of thing. Amanda, you play Laura, and of the three girlfriends, and you were all fantastic, but Laura's relationship with Jordan is especially tight and especially close and the most meaningful. So from your perspective, tell me a little bit about the relationship between Laura and Jordan.
Yeah, it seems like all four of these people have been friends for a really long time, but maybe Jordan and Laura were the first friends, or they've been friends the longest.
Right, and the deepest connection.
Yeah, they're, I would say, definitely kindred spirits and kind of not outliers from the four, but they definitely drag their feet as far as relationships are concerned, towards the beginning of the play anyway.
And the reason I think this show is so powerful, by the way, the reviews have all been great down the line. My review comment was very positive as well, is because it's almost irrelevant that Jordan is a gay man or surrounded by these women. That's kind of got nothing to do with it, because the story, well, it does have something to do with it, but the story and the impact of this story, it's really, Alex, about the loneliness. I don't know anybody who probably can't relate to being part of a group of friends when you're at that age group in your 20s or so, and one by one, they're all getting married or partnered off. There is somebody who's the last to go, and this show just, while it's funny, very funny, at the same time, you kind of walk out, and I mean, you walk out okay, you're happy, but at the same time, I found myself wanting to talk to people about it. All of a sudden, it's connecting one way or another to the person who's the last person standing.
Yeah. You know, I think that for me, I got to see this play in New York when it was on Broadway, and I thought it was, and I just fell in love with the script immediately, because, you know, in the last 4 years, the role of the single gay man has changed dramatically. It used to be there, you know, when gay marriage got legalized, suddenly a queer guy in his late 20s, who used to be sort of like fun and fancy free, all of a sudden, you know, 300 years of societal expectations were placed on him overnight. And immediately, you didn't have an excuse to not have a partner anymore. And there's, you know, the play is populated by a bunch of people in their late 20s, and then there's this grandmother character in her 80s.
Oh, yes.
Who
great.
Jordan has a special relationship with, played by the brilliant Ann Whitney, and she keeps regaling him with these stories of their family. And suddenly Jordan, like any, Jordan as a queer man, has been granted permission by the government to get married, and now his grandmother can put the same Jewish guilt on him that all of his, you know, female cousins and straight cousins have gotten for their whole lives.
Yeah, that Jewish guilt thing plays strongly, doesn't it? I've lived through that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, and you know, Matt, go ahead. Sorry, Alex, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, so, Laura, when I think of it, so you get off and get married. You're the last to go. And, and your relationship, the guy that you find, it's almost as though he's going to be the man in your life now, but as an audience member and somebody kind of watching it unfold, you can't help but think that if Jordan had been a straight man, the two of you might have ended up together. There's almost a discussion that the two of you actually belong together. It just can't be.
Yeah, we do kind of talk about that, and I think that's part of the interesting thing about having a relationship with a straight person and a gay person of opposite sexes, that, like, for instance, me and Alex, who we are dear friends, but that part of it just obviously is absent, but in a different dimension, maybe something like that would happen.
It's incredibly powerful. And so, and your cast members, everybody has their own thing, their own role. And you're right. I do want to, we should give a shout out to Ann Whitney as the grandmother, because what a great role that is. And by the way, I can't quite tell. Does Helene, the grandmother, does she know Jordan's story or not? It's hard to figure out. I think she does.
Yeah. I mean, it's left pretty ambiguous in the play. And I think that I think it's intentional that, like, Jordan's queerness isn't it's not a shocker to Helene. It's a non-event. You know, we don't have a scene where he comes out to his grandmother
because
that's not what the play is about. The play is not about reckoning with one's own queerness.
Right. It's one of the points I say. I say he happens to be a gay man. It just happens to be because everyone's going to relate to the show because of the power of what we've all lived through, which is having groups of friends and watching as one by one they fade away. It really doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, or otherwise. It's irrelevant.
Yeah. I think most of the story is about friendship and loneliness and what does it mean to be alone.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to be not alone? What does it mean to be coupled? And how does that affect your everyday relationships with friends?
I just have to ask you, when you guys leave the theater, you walk out afterwards, because that means in every audience you certainly have people there who are that person. They're the Jordans of the world. They're the ones left over at the end. Do you ever have people come up to you, either one of you, but Alex, they come up to you, they just kind of want to talk to you? Is it almost cathartic for them?
Yeah. I mean, I have friends of mine who are Jordan who have seen the show.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I used to be Jordan. I spent a lot of my 20s being Jordan. And, you know.
And lots of times he kind of still is Jordan.
And I kind of still am Jordan. Okay. I just happen to, you know, be partners. But I, you know, it's funny. I don't get a moment of catharsis in the play.
Huh.
You know, I think it ends sort of delicately, ambiguously as to whether or not Jordan's going to be okay. And so I leave the stage and I need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grab my whiskey and I go out into the lobby and people are like, I'm Jordan. And I just smile and nod and I think, no, I'm Jordan.
Now, actually, I have to ask you one thing, and this is me being the observant audience member, and I'm sure it's directed in or it's part of the script perhaps, but actually when we'll go out with the song, but when the last song plays, Because You Love Me by Celine Dion, Jordan's standing there, he's lost all his friends, I don't want to get too much away here, but Alex, there's a little movement you do with your hand. It's the last thing that happens. Am I right? That's scripted in, right?
Nope, not scripted in.
No.
Not scripted in. But you do it. But do you do it? Now I have to ask: is it something? Do you know what I'm talking about? And does it happen every night?
It happens every night. Yeah.
So that's something directed in, or is that Alex, or is that directed in?
That's
Alex. Kind of all found that together.
Okay, I just have to say,
at the moment, it's a callback to something that we do at the first scene, but it's. But no, just say what you're going to say, because what do you think it
well,
means?
Well, for me, when you sort of said ambiguous at the end, whatever, and I don't disagree, but when I saw that hand movement, now everybody's got to go see the show to see what I'm talking about, but when I see the slightest ever hand movement at the very end, I thought, he's going to be okay.
Well, I don't know if he's going to be okay, and I'm going to try to say this without giving too much away, but there's the scene, the last conversation with Grandma on the phone.
Right.
He says this really beautiful speech, which I, as Jordan and I, as Alex, interpret as you need to live in the present. I think that this play, Jordan spends so much time talking to his grandmother about the past, living in the past, his relationships with these girls,
and dreaming about his future.
Yeah.
And getting partnered and having children. And he's never able to live in the present moment, so much so that every event that happens in his life, the women's events, all the lives of the girls, we see happening in real time, but Jordan's events, we only see in flashback.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Always being recounted to the girlfriends. We never see him on stage living in the present moment. And I think that Grandma's speech and the end of the play, I don't know if he's going to be okay or not, but I know that he's trying his hardest to live in the present.
Wow.
And in that present moment, he's just going to listen to this song.
I love it. It makes sense. And the fact that we can have this kind of discussion, I think Joshua Harmon, who wrote this play, would be very happy that we were even having this discussion to get to the deeper meaning of this show, because it really is that good. It really had me thinking on the way out. And look, I even concentrated on your movement at the end of the show. The show is Significant Other. And by the way, before I say goodbye, I'm gonna actually have to say, Amanda, first of all, I thank you. And what a great role. But Alex, I have to give a special congratulations to you, because you, after – such a great and blossoming career. I mean, you really are one of the great talents in the city of Chicago, and we are now, I guess, losing you off to New York City, where you are now going to be in the new Harry Potter show, which apparently you can't get tickets, but I'm hoping that because I know you, I'll be able to get tickets. I'm going to throw your name all around, and I'm going with Amanda, so you can't say no. And but congratulations to you on what is clearly a great next step in your growing career.
Thank you so much.
And Amanda, what's next up for you after the show?
I can't say either, but I have something.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing after the show, so therefore we'll all be equal.
We're all just full of secrets.
It's About Face Theater and Theater Wit's production of Significant Other by Joshua Harmon. It's over at Theater Wit. You only have until December 9th to see it, and you can get tickets at aboutfacetheater.com. And by the way, About Face spells theater the correct way, T-R-E, the British way. That's the way you want to do it. Or you can go to theaterwit.org, spelled the improper way, T-E-R. But aboutfacetheater.com.
Wow.
Huh? It's a little snobby here. Or theaterwit.org. What, Alex?
No, it's just throwing shade, aren't we?
It's true. You admit it. Go on. So just because you're on there, you don't want to say anything. You know I'm right. Alex Weissman, Amanda Drinkle, you guys are great. The show's Significant Other. You're fantastic. We're going to go out with a little song, and maybe, although I can't see him, Alex will do the little hand movement that we're talking about. The show closes with Because You Love Me by Celine Dion. Alex Weissman, Amanda Drinkle, thanks. You're phenomenal in this show. The show is great. I encourage everybody to see it by December 9th. Thank you, my friends.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.